As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hello and welcome to On the Ball, the Norwich City podcast that was already getting bored of being the playoff dark horses anyway. The good news? The eight-goal swing never came close to materialising and Norwich City are officially playoff bound. The bad news? That entire 90 minutes at St Andrews on Saturday. Yeah, it was one of the Canaries' worst performances for quite a while, with none of the usual verve and Kenny suddenly finding touch with the regularity of a Six Nations fly half. Oh, to have been on a beach in Greece or sitting in the provincial theatre on Saturday afternoon like Dan and Ryan were. But in the words of our manager, who cares? Well, we'll ask our panel if they do, whether the players did, and if this downturn in form will be a concern ahead of the big game on Sunday. And speaking of Sunday and downturns in form, it's Leeds and it's Farker next weekend. Maybe not the semi-final opponents we were all desperately wanting to avoid, but not ones we were in a hurry to face either. We will laugh in the face of a 17-point gap and try to plot a way past them. And we'll talk ticket prices, try and ignore any other teams who may have been promoted this weekend. And if we've got time, we'll stop being grumpy and nervous for a few minutes and enjoy the factor in the playoffs and relive one or two highlights of what's been quite a good season, really. So, ahead of the big Daniel Farker reunion on Sunday, we've got a Friends Reunited session of our own with our panel this week, bringing together Eastern Daily Press, past and present. Firstly, very excitingly, making an on-the-ball debut, a bona fide Norwich City reporter. Remember when this pod used to have one of them? We know he can perform in a warm studio on Rowan Road, but the punters are asking, can he do it on a fairly mild Monday evening over video call? Well, we're about to find out. It's chief Norwich City reporter for the EDP and host of the Pinkham podcast, Connor Southwell. Connor, how are you doing?
Hello, Steve. Yeah, I'm very well. I'm delighted to be on. This has been a long time in the making, hasn't it?
Yes. But
we've got there in the end. We've squeezed it into the end of the season. So, no, delighted. I'm a regular listener, first-time appearance maker. So, yeah, looking forward to it.
Great. Well, I know that you have other Norwich City duties on your plate. So, yeah, we're just glad to have squeezed you. And obviously, your colleague, Dave Freezer, was on a few weeks ago and he was telling anecdotes about tortoises. So, it's a high bar.
Yeah, that's a good insight into what car journeys to away games are like. There's always a story that he's got. He's tremendous and it's really good at filling the time. So brilliant for shows like this.
Absolutely, yeah. We're all about filling time on the show, that's for sure. Our second guest has run a marathon since he was last on, so it's presumably the most likely of any of us to have the stamina for another three games in this long, long season. It's a big welcome back to Dave Powles. Dave, how are you doing, mate?
Yeah, good evening. I mean, to be honest, some of the games this season have felt harder than the marathon, actually, to be fair. But yeah, thanks for having me on, Steve, and good to see you again, Connor.
Good to see you, Dave.
Yes, yeah, it's always nice to bring people back together. And I have no idea of the games you're referring to, Dave. We might be about to talk about one of them, actually. We can do a compare as to whether this one was worse than the marathon in our headline act. Yeah, it's not been the worst week, but there's always slightly less enthusiasm in talking about a defeat. And when you fail to score, only have five shots on goal, and even your manager says he's not that bothered, that feeling is amplified somewhat. So let's not spend too long on this one. But Norwich City did lose 1-0 at Birmingham City on Saturday, a result that saw the Canaries reach the top six regardless, and the Blues relegated to League One anyway. So it was all a bit pointless, really. In the last 10 years, Norwich City, on the final day of the season, have had 2-0-1s, a 0-3, a 1-5, and 2-0-5s. So this is far from their worst final day, although I suppose it's not really the final day, is it? Because we've still got at least a couple more. Connor, you were there. Wasn't great. Not really in keeping with this calendar year either. They had scored 22 out of 23 in 2024 before this. So what do you put the performance down to? I mean, was it tricky opposition? Was it a mindset problem? Just an off day? All of the above?
Yeah, probably all of the above. I mean, watching it, I just got the sense it was one team and you felt it inside St Andrews who absolutely desperately needed to win, and a team that didn't really. And that was kind of how it played out, it felt to me. And so much of football is, particularly in the Championship, we've just referenced marathons, and it is a bit like that. And so much of it is about the here and now, but just looked like a team that was desperately looking at what comes next. And maybe not that there were any situations like this per se, but I think if a 50-50 would have popped up, there would have been one team going with that with much more gusto for obvious reasons. So, yeah, that I felt, you know, it was just probably a lot of players trying not to get injured, trying to manage themselves, and a team, like you say, that just was off colour. And I thought there was a few tactical stuff as well. The pushing forward of Marcelino Nunez didn't help. Felt to me like they had a lot of good technical players ahead of the ball too often, and they just sort of got penned in a little bit. But yeah, it's one that is going to be forgotten pretty swiftly, actually. And you know, it's not a game when we look in 5 years' time that we're going to be talking about. It's going to be this one on Sunday. So I can understand why that was the attitude and why that's how it played out. And you know, I'm loathe to do this really, but and analyze football in this way. But I think it can simplistically be put down to one team just wanting and needing it a little bit more than the other. And I think that's probably at the heart of everything that happened on Saturday.
Yeah, that seems the likeliest reason, Dave. The starting 11 did have the look of a side taking this seriously, at least. But everything that followed felt like they didn't really, from the performance to the subs and everything else.
I think the starting 11 highlighted the strange position that Wagner was in, because in reality, you know, there wasn't much chance of us slipping out, but we had to make sure, so we had to go with as strong a squad as possible. But I mean, I took that almost as an indicator of just how sort of weak the squad is currently. Because I think if he really had two or three, I know Sorensen was in, but if he'd had two or three other options that were maybe fitter, he had more, he had held more value against them, then I think we might have seen a few more changes than we did. But I just think that quite simply, we've got probably, we are scraping a kind of a fit and ready 11, and the ones on the bench are either seem to be coming back from injury, or he just simply hasn't got that much faith in them, or they're kids and he seems loath to play them very much. So yeah, it was just a strange nothing day, wasn't it?
Yeah, there's not really that much that we can talk about that actually happened. I think, I'd like to say, five shots, two of those were kind of from long range. Nunez had the only real chance for Norwich City. I mean, I think it will be quickly forgotten, Connor, but do you think, and you know, we will obviously come on to what's next, but is there a chance that this affects momentum at all? And I suppose sort of second part of that question is, should they have pushed for that fifth place? Like, will that make a difference to you know, in terms of where we finished?
I think it could be argued both ways, if I'm honest, in terms of fifth place, because what you've got at the moment, and there is an element of this which is maybe not caught me by surprise. I understand how football works and people look at form tables and things like that, but I think whoever you played, Leeds or Southampton, are two teams that are above average in terms of their position in the Championship. Leeds, who have obviously finished with 90 points, which would get you automatic promotion in the vast majority of Championship seasons, if not 99% of them. So you've got a team there that has been exceptionally good and has just missed out. And then you've got Southampton, who also have been very, very good, and I think have got a higher points average than fourth, and potentially even third as well, across average. So these are two very, very good teams. I think from a footballing perspective, I would have preferred Southampton because of the way that Norwich play. I know you've referenced it, I think it might have been last week's podcast or one before, but Norwich being the only team in sort of that group between fourth and sixth that has less of the ball than on average than their opponents. I think there probably is an argument to make that transitionally that might have been better suited for them. We've all seen how vulnerable Southampton have been from those type of situations. Leeds, I think, have a better grade of individual quality. And obviously, we all know about the coach as well, who isn't bad. So, yeah, I think you could make arguments for and against. I think the reality is it would have been immensely difficult, whoever it was. But yeah, I think what Dave said ultimately is right. There is probably a little bit of an issue with depth. And I think, you know, we've spoken about that all season long, really. And I think also probably the desire to experiment, the desire to see if Nunez in the 10 would work. I think that is maybe what Saturday gave an opportunity to do. It didn't. We know that now, and now we can push ahead and recognize that. So yeah, probably lots of elements at play, but I'm probably not a subscriber to the whole momentum thing. I think that's a little bit of an urban myth, if I'm being completely honest.
I feel a bit different to that, Connor, because I just feel like and I know next Sunday will be different. It's Leeds, you know, we've got some great games with Leeds over the years, but I feel like, you know, so much goodwill had been won back, and I don't think that's all been lost. But the last three games, it's just completely and utterly petered out. So I do think momentum matters. I think that in many ways, getting one of those two games at home and winning those, in particular the last one, would have been more important probably than Birmingham for that. So I would have liked us to end the season a bit stronger, to go in with a bit more confidence, and the fans are, you know, it doesn't take much to get us grumpy at the minute, Norwich fans, it seems. But I hope by Sunday that will be forgotten, because the playoffs are just strange, aren't they? Weird things happen in the playoffs every single year.
They absolutely do, and Leeds fans probably know that more than most. What's really interesting about this playoff battle is, and you know, Connor, you're absolutely right, the teams above us are pretty high quality, I think, particularly Leeds and Southampton in terms of their points totals, but no team is coming into it in form. You know, we can talk about the playoffs more generally, but I was having a look, and the last four seasons, there's no team that's finished between third and sixth has had fewer than 9 points in the previous six games. This season, no team's got more than 9 points. We have had 9 points in our last six, and we're the most informed side that there is. So I think us and Southampton both have 9. So I don't think we're going to know off the back of this whether momentum is or isn't a myth, because no team's got it. So we'll see. I've touched on this a couple of times already, Dave, but Wagner saying to Chris on BBC Radio Norfolk, it wasn't great, but to be totally honest, who cares? I mean, again, it's one of these things that will probably end up being lost and people will forget about in a few days, but that's received a bit of a backlash. Is that something that a manager should never say?
Yeah, I don't know. We want managers to be honest, don't we? And then sometimes when they are, we don't like what we hear. I was speaking to someone who went about that and said, you know, did that must have, because I think it was, that was probably the only kind of issue I had, was that to 2,200 people, and I know we're going to come on to ticket price in a minute, you know, it's a lot of money to go to Birmingham to, you know, to watch a game. You might take another person, stay overnight, et cetera, et cetera. A little bit insulting maybe to those people who do care. But the person I spoke to yesterday said, you know what, it was brilliant on the terraces. We had a great time, and that what happened on the pitch was rubbish, but it was a really good atmosphere. So, which doesn't, you know, I watched it on telly. It doesn't come across, does it, that's what's going on. So, it was a strange comment to make, I think, but it will get lost in the wash, won't it? So he said more interesting things this season. And, you know, without going back too far on that, when I heard him make those famous comments about the fans, I thought, God, that's him done. That's going to be a total backlash. But actually, I think that was the turning point of the season. And a lot of fans actually did some reflection themselves on the back of that. So yeah.
I think some fans have. I think some might still take some convincing. I mean, arguably, the best moments came in the stands, but I think arguably the best moments for me were before and after the game. I don't know if you've seen the stuff about a couple of viral moments of the referee tapping the EFL badge on his chest as the teams walked out of the tunnel, which I absolutely loved. Like, you know, just a classic, like, you know, I don't know if sort of archetypal EFL heroes.
Did he kiss the badge when he gave a good decision?
Maybe, yeah, if he'd had a chance to give a penalty or something, perhaps he would have done. We'll never know. I don't know.
As a qualified ref, you know, sometimes you do celebrate the good decisions. It's very sad. There's nothing a ref celebrates more than a good advantage. When it goes on to be a chance, you know, inside you kind of like, you feel it.
Is it Mike Dean against Tottenham? Have you seen that?
Yes,
he sort of pulls away in celebration, waving his finger because he's really
and
pleased.
Did he kiss the badge?
I don't. There was definitely a lot of finger waving. I don't know if there was any kissing badges in that sort of situation, though.
It's also the only thing that referees ever get praised for is for giving a good advantage. But they will always get praised for that, but nothing else. And then the other thing was after the game, the Birmingham City fan who pinged one into the net from 30 yards. I don't know if either of you saw that.
That's fantastic.
What a finish that was. That was over a wall.
There's not many people who have to bend it past that 2,000 strong wall, is there, into the top corner?
And he didn't give himself any time. You know, normally, obviously, if it was David Beckham or Gabriel Sarri, you know, they're sizing it up for a good 30 seconds. But this fella just dropped it, kicked it, and straight into the roof. If you haven't seen it yet, I'd very much recommend.
What a strange pitch invasion, though. Do you not agree?
Yeah. Well, they didn't really seem like they were protesting the relegation? But
it was really odd, because obviously they'd just gone down. And you've got lots of different reactions to that. You've got people who sort of hung around for a little while, because I think I went to sort of sit in the press conference room, but Birmingham players, I think, did reappear and do a lap of probably not appreciation, but, you know, whatever it was, they clapped the fans. And there were obviously people there who were sort of sat in their seats, and there's almost like a grieving stage, isn't there, for some people. And it was odd, because I don't really understand what they were doing. Because like you say, it wasn't an act of protest. It wasn't, you know, celebration. It was just sort of invading the pitch just to say that you got on the pitch, and a lot of people taking selfies and goading Norwich fans. So yeah, I really, really don't understand why, but they saw their opportunity and they went for it.
I mean, it's probably been a few years since Birmingham fans have had the opportunity to invade the pitch.
To be fair, there was a bit of talk pre-game that come what may, there might be a pitch invasion. So I don't know if it was something that was pre-planned that I don't know about. But yeah, it's odd. And I think that's the second time I've ever seen a pitch invasion in my life. And the first one was when Norwich beat Ipswich in the playoffs last time around. So an odd experience, to say the least, that one.
Maybe they were like, if we win, we're on the pitch. And they hadn't checked the other results. They just assumed that one of the others would trip.
We did have the classic final day, false bit of information, and everyone sort of getting up and celebrating. And then everyone going, well, who the hell scored? And obviously no one had scored. So that was good. You could tick that off the bingo card.
Anyone who, as I am, is of the chase here, will remember many, many times being in the Barclay, everyone chanting, on the pitch, on the pitch. And everyone sort of making moves to go on the pitch, but they're not quite having the courage to go on the pitch, going back to their seats, getting angry again. I think that was about 15 games in a row where Norwich fans threatened but failed to get onto the pitch.
Wow. I mean, yeah. And ever since then, it's all been kind of plain sailing with that. Well, there's never, you know, however fans may feel about Delia, she's certainly not protest worthy at any stage. So perhaps we should be glad that we don't have a reason to invade the pitch beyond the odd promotion that we get here and there. You've said, Dave, that Norwich City fans don't always need a reason to moan, and I am conscious that we have made it into the playoffs, right? That was confirmed. We were virtually there, but this podcast being this podcast, we were fearing the worst last week. In fact, I think Troy Deeney said before the game that he could see Hull making it, which indicates to me, it's like, you haven't looked at the table, have you? It's not going to happen. But yes, we're officially there. And Connor, I mean, you know, I'm sure you've said it many, many times and written about it many, many times, but considering where they were in November and, you know, even New Year's Day, really, it's been a hell of an effort, really, to get in the top six.
Yeah, absolutely. One I didn't see coming, I'm sure probably very few people did. I remember being stood in the press room at Sunderland, and David Wagner had just finished his post-match press conference. And I think all of us were sort of looking around and puffing our cheeks out and thinking, oh, blimey, that's probably it. Because he looked broken, he looked beaten. Then obviously limped on to Blackburn. And if people weren't doing it after that Sunderland game, we definitely were doing it after Blackburn. And we're probably, you know, sometimes when you do the job that I do, you make sure that you have your phone next to you in case of something quite regularly. And that was definitely the case that night. And I didn't see it coming. And it's remarkable what they've been able to achieve, actually. And I think what you've sensed and what you've got all season, and, you know, I know it's been spoken about a lot, but I think it's genuine. And so often we can hear sort of coaches bring it out to kind of try and save themselves a little bit. But there has been a real togetherness. And I think what has happened during that autumn spell probably has helped them in the here and now to navigate some of the issues that they've had over the second half of the season, because you obviously learn as a group. And I'm sure it's like this for every sort of culture. When you're tested like that, either you break or you kind of pull yourself closer together. And obviously the latter has happened, and you know, they've had to ride their luck along the way. Let's be honest, it hasn't all been brilliant to watch, and it all hasn't been, you know, free flowing and massively entertaining. But the crucial aspect is they've done it, and they've navigated some really big hurdles as well. Hull away, West Brom at home, Coventry at home. You know, to lose what, three games in the second half of that season, the league games, Leeds, Middlesbrough, and then Birmingham. It's a remarkable effort, and everyone involved deserves real praise. And I know that there's been real confidence even since October, November. There's been a real belief amongst that team and the people, the coaching team, that they can get promotion, and they were probably the only people in Norfolk who felt that at one stage, and maybe they're not now. So yeah, remarkable achievement, irrespective of what happens to here from here, or maybe even what your view is on certain individuals who have got Norwich here. I think it's very hard not to look at it and say, wow, it's remarkable what they've done from a position where it felt like it was going to break and shatter into a million pieces. They've somehow, you know, stuck a few bits of papier-mâché on the side, and we've got through, and we've finally got something that looks cohesive, which is good.
Yeah, I think that togetherness is absolutely spot on. And I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, Steve, because you, so many times over the years, you sit in the stands and a manager is under pressure and you hear people saying they're not playing for the manager and that one's given up and stuff. And genuinely, I don't think that's been you've heard that once. I think we talked a couple of weeks ago about that Kenny McLean moment. That was one of the ones for me where you know, the fans were getting on his back, and he just went crazy at the whole South Stand, didn't he? Come on, I'll have all of you. And that for me was the moment when I was like, you know, these players are really believing the manager. And sometimes you do sense the opposite. And I think that you're right, that's been the massive key for where we've got. The other thing as well, you just need to look at we would have taken this at the start of the season, I'm sure, in reality. Obviously most Norwich fans feel that we're entitled to be higher, but in reality, I think looking at last season, sixth would have been, wow, you know, that could be a really good season. But you only need to look at Birmingham. They were sixth, weren't they, when they got rid of John Eustace, yep. And look what's happened to them. So the grass isn't always greener, and they do deserve credit for sticking by him and seeing if he could turn it around.
And there's something about...
I think, I think just very quickly, but on the fan front, I think that's been used as well by the players and the squad, actually. We're going to prove you wrong. And I think that's actually been part of what has maybe pushed them together at points. Even, you know, you spoke about that Watford game, even in the midst of that, I think there was a real kind of siege mentality that's developed, and that can be really powerful. And I think we've probably seen that when you get the ball rolling and you've got that, we used the word earlier, momentum, it's very, very hard to stop. And I think we've seen that kind of grow. And I was probably wondering in January, as everyone else was, you know, and when we saw some of those performances, which weren't great, but they were getting results. And you almost find out if the performances catch up with the results, or if the results catch up with the performances. And in the end, it was the former. So it's remarkable what they've done and how they've done it in the midst of what everyone else has sort of felt has been a bit chaotic, but maybe it's been a little bit simpler than everyone else thought.
I mean, they have proved the fans wrong. I think that's, you know, I'm pretty sure it was 6 months to the day, because I think the Blackburn game was on the 5th of November. Mm-hmm. And if you told me when we were sitting here, basically writing him off at that point and saying, when's he going to be sacked, that we'd be unbeaten at home for the rest of the season, you know, Sunday notwithstanding, potentially, and we'd be looking at a playoff semi-final, then I would have, with the same manager still in charge, I would never have believed you. And I think really good point about some of those points that we picked up, ugly points we picked up in January. I still think back to that Southampton game at home, and how we would come off the back of two bad 1-0 defeats, really, away from home. The atmosphere was not good in the stands. The football we played was not good that day. The fans in the Snake Pit, I can still remember telling David Wagner exactly what they thought of his football. Josh Sargent came on, grabbed a goal. We got a point. We didn't really deserve it, but that is not a point that we would have got last season, purely because I think the characters that have been added to this squad have just given us a little bit more grit and meant that we've dug out some quite a lot of points this season that we haven't really deserved. And I think you mentioned Hull away. That was, I think, the following game after that Southampton one in the league. You know, that sometimes you can get lucky, but I think you sort of earn that in a way. And I think that's what Norwich have done really well. And speaking of Hull, actually, I mean, again, looking back to January, we were certainly casting envious glances at some of their signings. They've kind of blown it, I think. They've not really come to the party at all. And Norwich, having only added Sydney Van Hooijdonk to the squad, and you know he's yet to start a game, have rode the squad until the end of the season with injuries. I think it's pretty commendable, really, what they've done, and we'll see where it goes from here. And with that, we'll slightly swap the order around because we can't leave Leeds to the end. So I'm going to hit Motti.
This is almost fantasy football.
Yeah, a playoff semi-final at Carrow Road against Leeds United. I think everybody knows this by now. And as if that weren't enough, let's throw Daniel Farker into the opposition dugout as well. It's the first time in 12 years that a team has faced their former manager in a Championship playoff tie. We're at home on Sunday, 12th of May at midday, and the away leg is 8 p.m. on Thursday, the 16th. Unfortunate news for you here. 17 points is the biggest deficit between two clubs in the 35-year history of second-tier playoff games. But, you know, records are there to be broken, right? And Norwich City have never lost a playoff semi-final, whereas Leeds quite famously have. I feel like if I keep mentioning that, it's going to manifest it. Dave, Leeds beat us at home and away this season, but were in decent form going into both those games, whereas now they absolutely aren't. But if we just take the first leg here in isolation, with Leeds home form and away form to come in the second, and our away form rather to come in the second leg, what do you think we need to do on Sunday? Where do you think we need to be?
Oh God, I find the playoffs really hard. I absolutely love the playoffs. I think they're brilliant, and you know, I know they're unfair, but in terms of how the drama that they bring to the end of the season, they're absolutely fantastic. But therefore, I find them completely and utterly impossible to predict. because I could say, well, we need a two-goal swing or a one-goal swing to go into the second leg, but who knows what happens. I can remember the game, was it Peterborough last year, and they were versus Sheffield Wednesday, and I think they were 4-0 up, were they? Was that what it was? And it went to 4-4. So I don't know. I can't provide any insightful analysis into this one, Steve, other than, you know, it seems clear that we are nowhere near the favourites, but I just don't think that matters. Leeds could just completely bottle it. I don't know. We need to aim for the lead, don't we?
Okay, that was going to be my question. Would you be happy if we were level going to Elland Road, or would you want us to be in front at that point?
I think in reality, it would be hard to go in level because Leeds on that Thursday night are going to be absolutely bouncing. But sometimes, again, that's causes strange things to happen. So I think we've got to aim to be ahead, haven't we, to probably have a realistic chance, but who knows?
Yeah, I think that's going to be the extent of our tactical analysis for this one. The playoffs are mad. We haven't got a clue. Connor, if we flip it to the kind of lead side of things, it's quite an interesting tactical dynamic, this one, I think, because I feel like Leeds this season would be gunning for 3 points in this, just because of the relentless nature of that chase for the top two. But here it might be slightly different in that they might back themselves to go to Elland Road and win. So therefore, do you think that they might approach it differently?
Yeah, I do. I think there's, and this is what's been really interesting, I think, about some of the comments about Leeds from the Norwich side in the last few days and weeks, particularly around their form. And I understand it, but you look at it, they're still the second best defensive side in the Championship this season, behind Leicester, who won the league. So this is a team that has, by and large, and yes, they got beat 4-0 at QPR. And I think Daniel Farker spoke a little bit after the Southampton game about why he approached that in the way that he did, and maybe why it was slightly unconventional, because you concede that many goals and then you go into your next game, and this is what he said: you, as a coach, you're almost trying to shut up shop and not concede. But actually, because of the circumstances they were in, and because they wanted to get an early goal and try and put Ipswich on the back foot slightly and increase the pressure levels, he almost approached it the opposite way. He did a lot more sign of work on attacking and probably made that game a lot more open than it should have been. So I think you can almost discount that Southampton game in a sense. And then he was kind of asked, because I listened to his whole post-match press conference to see if there was any Norwich quotes. That's why I know so much about what he said. But he was kind of asked about how he'd use the eight days that he had between the QPR and the Southampton game, and it's the same gap that he'd have to the playoff semi-final, and how he would kind of differ them. And that was kind of what he said. It said it would be different and probably more normal in terms of the process that they'd want to get back to. So, yeah, I think naturally that probably brings you to the conclusion that they are going to be a lot more balanced. And one thing, you know, from the Norwich side, you look at it and you know, as David said, I think you do want to get to Elland Road with an edge. And if not with an edge, then definitely with on level terms. I think they'll almost be viewing it in the same. If you can get it level going back to Elland Road, or if you can even get yourself ahead heading to Elland Road, then that's a hell of an advantage. So I think in reality, it's going to be very, very, very tight. And I think irrespective of how Sunday goes, barring, you know, someone really not showing up or someone really showing up, we're probably going to be looking at a second leg, which is quite open and where there's quite still a lot to play for. So, yeah, it's going to be really interesting. And, you know, I know a lot of people have spoken about the psychology of Leeds missing out. And actually, you know, I know you've probably looked at the statistics yourself, Steve. It's actually third place teams that have gone up more consistently out of anyone. And a sixth place team hasn't gone up since Ian Holloway's Blackpool in 2010, I think. So, you know, you could say maybe it's time for a sixth place team to go up, or you can look at it and go with the stats, I guess. That's entirely up to you. But yeah, you're right. 17 points is a massive gap to bridge. And actually, I think what we spoke about in terms of that togetherness and how this group has pushed itself so together, maybe that's the answer as to how you bridge a 17-point gap. Because quite often, even if you know, and Wagner kind of said this post-game, you might not have the best squad, but if you've got the best team, the best collective, the team that's willing to push that extra inch and that extra yard, sometimes that's the way to bridge a gap in quality. So that's got to be the aim, I think.
I've got a question for you, actually. Quiz question on, because I was having a look at this for a column that, my column on BBC Sport, a little plug for that this week. In the last 10 playoff campaigns in the Championship, the teams who've come third or fourth have gone up. In eight of those campaigns, the team it's been a team that's finished third or fourth, i.e. at home in the second leg. Who were the two managers for the two times that didn't happen? They both finished fifth. Do you know who either of those managers might have been?
Yeah, Wagner will be one.
Wagner is one, correct.
Wow. With Huddersfield. But the interesting thing about those playoffs, and I sort of tweeted this yesterday, was you had sort of the four teams were 5 points apart. So that's a hell of a lot closer in terms of quality than this set of playoffs.
Was
Ian Holloway?
Ian Holloway did do it, but it was more than 10 years ago. I think he did.
Oh, really?
I'll give you a clue. There's a Norwich City link there, which is why I ask the question. Quite a recent Norwich City link, in fact.
Dean Smith.
Correct, Dean Smith with Aston Villa. Right. Wagner, as we know, has the pedigree. And interestingly, you know, you'd say Farke would be brilliant in this position, but has never had a team in the playoffs, right? So I don't know where you'd rather be in this situation, the guy with two promotions and no playoffs, or the guy that's taken a team up through the playoffs already. Although, didn't Huddersfield... did they only score one goal and that was an own goal in the three games?
Correct.
So I don't know. I mean, I feel like that's not going to work twice, but we'll see. Dave, how do you think we shape up for this one then? Obviously, no Ashley Barnes. That feels like a loss. But will he be changing the 11 from what we saw on Saturday, do you think?
Oh, I think, yeah, I think he's... I just don't know. I do find him quite hard to predict. Sorensen... I just think I know he sort of adds a bit of solidity that he wants, but I do sometimes struggle to see what Sorensen adds over the long term. And I still think that the biggest issue is going to be the strength and depth of the squad against Leeds. Who have we got to bring on to when legs are tiring? I know that we've got Janulis back. That's the thing that really worries me. For me, the key player's got to be Sara, getting him involved in the game as offensively as much as possible. And I'd say it's a little bit of a worry the last few games. You know, Josh Sargent hasn't been quite able to get the chances that he had been 3 or 4 or 5 weeks ago. So maybe there's more about him and Barnes as a partnership than we kind of expect or believe. So yeah, the strength and depth in depth does worry me. And yeah, like you said earlier, like Nunez, as long as, you know, we've got that core middle bit, which has been, I think, really key. Gibson, who's been phenomenal, Gunn, Nunez, Sara, McLean, and Sargent, we've got a chance, because that's just really strong six players, isn't it, who have ended the season really well, bar McLean on Sunday. But yeah, I worry about the strength and depth.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Sort of eight or nine of that team, as long as they're all fit, kind of picks themselves. Connor, I'm hoping your kind of roving reporter presence is going to help us. What's happened to Fastnacht? Was he injured? Because I think he was. Okay, and will he be back? What's the kind of diagnosis?
Yeah, it was. So I put that to David post game. He said it was a slight groin issue, but given obviously the magnitude of what was to come, they didn't want to take any chances. And then asked him again on Rowe, and he sort of intimated, but didn't say definitively that he would, if he started him. This is what he said: if I started him, I'd have to take him off after 45 minutes. So that to me is a player that's probably not quite where they would need him to be heading into this playoff campaign to start. So yeah, that's the injury update.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for that. Yeah, I mean, and that's a problem, right? The right, you know, you would want one of those to be fully fit, but looks like neither of them is going to make 90 minutes. I would be more inclined to start Fastnacht, I think, purely because, as you say, Dave, our strength in depth is not great. And I think holding Rowe back and having him to come, although he hasn't made the most positive impact, having done that in the last couple of games, is something that I think is probably worth doing. But we'll see. Like you say, he does bring the odd surprise. So we'll see what happens there. A few noises about ticket prices, £36 for the game at Carrow Road. I'm pretty sure only two of us are going to be paying that money on the day. So I'll come to you, Dave. Is that, I mean, you know, I suppose it's not surprising. It doesn't come with the cost of the season ticket, but yeah, I can understand why there's been a bit of grumbling about that.
Yeah, I was having this debate today. I don't have an issue with it being charged, with there being a price to pay, to be honest. I do think that that's a bit steep, though. I do think that they should, you know, I was 20,000 season tickets, who might pay £36 each, that, you know, work that out. It's a lot of money for the club. It is a business at the end of the day, but I think they probably could have gone a bit lower with the overall price. So I don't have an issue with being charged. Might surprise you, Steve. I have bought two tickets, but I won't be going. I've stepped aside, so my wife Kim can go with our eldest son. So I'll be watching at home on Sky with my youngest.
Wow, what a gesture! What a guy. How did you feel about doing that?
I can't feel, I don't know, it's weird. I don't feel that excited about these semi-finals. I'm more excited about the possible prospect of taking my kids, if I could get tickets, to a final. I don't know why that is, but yeah.
I mean, I love the optimism. I'll say that. That's quite the gamble to go, it's fine, I'll do the final. could be crushing disappointment in 10 days' time. But, you know, let's hope not. Well, you'll have to give us the full update of the Sky coverage and just how disgusting the Leeds love in it. I mean, we were getting Ipswich goal updates on Saturday. I was kind of thinking, read the room, guys. Come on. this is not what we want to be seeing. Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe we shouldn't be surprised by the club in the kind of with the profiteering, but the Wembley tickets are going to be a fair bit steeper than that. And I suppose it's one of those, if they win and, you know, if they win 3-0 or whatever, then it'll all be worth it. But it's the risk you take as a fan, I guess, isn't it? And whatever the result, I mean, this is what being a fan is all about, right? So, you know, hopefully it's not too unbearable and we can enjoy it somewhat. And only our third ever playoff campaign as well, which, I mean, it strikes me as really weird. We've never come fourth or fifth in the championship since the playoffs have started. Just for a yo-yo team like Norwich City, seems really odd. That's not a question, it's just an observation. Anyway, things we're not going to talk about this week, didn't really want to talk about them to the extent that they've been moved down the order, but I am getting ahead of myself now, Connor, but West Brom and Southampton obviously contesting the other playoff semi-final. So how do we see that one going? And let's just hypothetically, let's live in Dave's fantasy world where we get to that final. Who would we rather play out of those two, do you think?
Well, this has been a bit of my kind of in my thinking of the whole, do Norwich want to finish fifth or sixth? Because in reality, I've got a feeling that they'll probably have to beat both Southampton and Leeds if they want to get promoted. So I think Southampton probably edge that one over West Brom, even though West Brom have been incredibly strong at home all season, really, and remarkably consistent and have a very good coach. I think Southampton, probably my pick if I was to sit here right now and pick a team to win it. I think I'd probably pick Southampton.
What basis?
I just think the way that they play and the quality that they have, and also I think the weeks that they've spent planning. I know that Russell Martin has been doing a lot in the last few weeks, looking at teams that they could possibly face, and basically has written off the last few weeks in order to do that and prepare and try things in basis for that. So I think they are going to be very well prepared for this particular knockout competition. But like you say, it's West Brom strong defensively as well. And if you look at knockout football generally, it tends to be the teams with the best defensive records who win it. So I've just got a sneaky feeling on Southampton, if I'm honest. But yeah, I back them to probably come through the West Brom tie, I think. So yeah, if we're going in a scenario where Norwich get through to the final, I think it would be Daniel Farke and then Russell Martin. So narratives all around.
Yeah, which again, great for the paper.
And we've had some great games against Southampton over the years. I'd much rather it was Southampton. We just always seem to end up playing good matches against them. 5-4s, 4-3s, all sorts.
4-4 this season as well, at their place. I think, again, negative minds here, but I feel like if we're going to lose out in the final, I think I would rather lose to Southampton than West Brom somehow. It'd feel like we'd let it get away, I think, if we lost to West Brom, whereas losing to Southampton doesn't seem so bad. In my head, I don't know why, I just have this feeling that Southampton were destined to bottle this season. Well, bottle's not the right word, but I just feel like it ends for them there. I kind of think it's the winner of our game. I don't know why I feel that, but I think it'll be us, or I think we can get past Leeds, and I genuinely think we could do it. But another stat for you: no team has ever been promoted with from the Championship to the Premier League having conceded more than 62 goals. Southampton have conceded 63, and we've conceded 64. So if either of us do it, then that's his record. It must have been a lot of goals in the league this year. That callback to the Southampton game leads me on quite nicely to the fact that, I mean, the season's not done yet, but it seems like a good opportunity at least to have a little trip down memory lane and do a bit of a revisit. Connor, you've been to every single game this year, which the effort.
That's got to take some years off, hasn't it? How many years is that taking off? That's my question, really.
The last few months hasn't been so bad. I think you could probably add 5 years for that Plymouth game alone, I would say.
I think you're right.
Have you had a best away trip, either for what has happened on the pitch or for anything that's happened off it? Is there anything that's like 5 or 10 years time is gonna stick in your memory?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't want to peel back the curtain too much, but we tend to, and this probably says more about us as individuals, we tend to rate away trips based on the food that we consume.
Sure. Over
the course, yeah. Which, and as you can imagine, in the Championship, there are some clubs that are significantly better, and that may have been a good reason for Norwich finishing fifth instead of sixth. Let's put it that way. any ones that have been particularly good, and to be honest, the football's factored into that as well. So immediately when you think of Plymouth, everything about that was just dismal, beyond the fact it's a really nice part of the world, and I'm sad that it sort of tarnished my willingness to go back there. There's nothing that massively stands out, if I'm honest, which is quite boring. I don't think we've been largely incident free. There was a case where I drove us into a random village in search for a service station. That was pretty memorable, and that was after a defeat as well, from memory. So I don't think the guys were too happy with me for that. So no, not hugely, which is quite boring. I'm sure if I thought about it longer, I could probably come up with something. So maybe Dave can take over, and I'll see if I can think of anything else.
We're talking away matches, Steve.
If there's any that stand out to you, home matches as well, if not.
Well, I mean, the home match has to be the Ipswich game. I mean, the atmosphere. I know there's been some amazing derby games over the season, but that just, there was something about that day, wasn't it? I think every Norwich fan sort of getting a bit kind of and philosophical here, but it sensed it. It was just something, there was just something in the air that day, and Norwich fans just kind of woke up. And I've been quite critical of us as fans over the years, because I think that quite often we are quite miserable. And I sometimes think that as a fan base, maybe we've got a little bit kind of bored and just kind of go a bit more out of a sense of duty rather than excitement. And I can kind of sense that, to be honest, where I sit, I sense that a lot. So the Ipswich game was very different. And for me, it's a very personal one, because I had my first away trip with my two boys this season. Took them up to the Preston game. I used to live in Preston. I had 5 years in Preston. That was where I started my journalism career. And my memories of Preston as a Norwich City fan tends to just be drizzly, dismal Tuesday night, 4-0 defeats, 3-1 defeats. So I kind of went up there for the weekend to see some friends with the boys, thinking this is going to, you know, this could be one of those. But it wasn't the best game that day. It's not that far ago, Colin. I'm sure you can remember it. But there's just something about following Norwich City away. All of the stuff that I've just talked about that does go on at home just gets kind of left behind. It just literally gets left in Norfolk, because I think everyone who's putting that effort in is just thinking, well, if I'm going to be here, I might as well have a great time. The atmosphere was fantastic that day. Boys had a brilliant time. And obviously we got the win as well. So that's definitely up there with the Ipswich game for me.
I got some free muffins on the way home from Preston. So that's particularly memorable.
I think we're getting an insight into where Connor's priorities really lie on these trips. Did you say to the boys, Dave, this is not what a trip to Deepdale's like? You haven't suffered enough yet. We're not supposed to win these games.
Yeah, definitely. No, I think they've been fans of Norwich City long enough to know that when we win, there's no point in having expectations that's what it's going to be like. And it's funny, because it's very much a side point, but this is the first season. My eldest kid is 11. He's been going for a few years on and off now. I try not to take him too much, because I think you want it to keep it special. But this was the first season pre-Christmas where they just weren't begging me to go as much, and they lost a little bit of interest. And I remember I had one game, actually, I ended up going with Michael Bailey to that game. Literally, just neither of my boys were interested, and just kind of no one else seemed interested. So obviously, you know, Michael was the last resort, but that wasn't the case, I promise. But yeah, it was really interesting to see. And I do think that was because of what was being served up on the pitch. And I think that was a bit of kind of my kids, they sat through some dire seasons, you know, season with Dean Smith and the dire first half of the season with Wagner. And I could sort of sense that, oh God, they're losing a little bit of interest here. So it's been really nice as well from a personal point of view to see them kind of regain that interest. And that's not just because all they care about is winning. That is because it's become more entertaining again.
Yeah, I guess actually to say that any Norwich City fan hasn't suffered across the last 2 years or had the side of being a football fan that's not so much fun, it's probably not correct, is it? So, yeah, I mean, and that is another thing about this season, right? You know, say whatever you like about some of the away games and what have you, but it's just nice to have a team that's challenging for something again, that's winning games, that, you know, where you feel invested in the fact that they might get in the top six. I think, you know, easy to say with hindsight, but I think last season it didn't ever really feel like we were a top six team, whereas I think because this one's steadily been building in the right direction, it's always felt like we can get there. You know, we have been spoilt at times, and I think that's, people are still comparing it to those two Farker years, but my memory's a bit shorter, and I'm just happy that we're kind of back at the right end and challenging. And yeah, Connor, just to come back to a big year for the Pinken as well. You know, you've had Westy, which was obviously one environment. You've had all the stuff with Stuart Webber, and, you know, just the usual excellent reporting. How's it been? You know, I don't know how many years you've been there now, but how does it compare to other years in terms of how this one's gone?
Well, thank you, firstly, for your very kind words. Yeah, it's been a really weird season. So this is I worked it out the other day. I'm pretty sure this is my, unless I've counted wrong, which is a possibility, this is my fifth, I think, but fourth full season, I think. So yeah, this has been probably the most bizarre in terms of it being so up and so down and everything that has followed in between with the various episodes that you mentioned. So yeah, it's been good fun. I've really enjoyed it for different reasons, mainly because I have no life, so that's always helpful. But it's been good, and I'm very lucky to obviously do the job that I do, and being a Norwich fan, it makes it a lot more pleasurable at points, and obviously get to work with great people doing things that I love. So that adds to it. And then obviously what happens on the pitch is largely secondary-ish. But I'd echo what you said there. The fact that we're now looking ahead to a playoff campaign that we probably all thought was unthinkable, is it really adds to it, particularly when you do my job. You want to cover games like playoff semi-finals. You want to go and cover a playoff final. I haven't done that yet in this job. So that'd be a nice one to tick off. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And hopefully it ends in the way that we all hope, because and there's a bit of an urban myth. I think this maybe follows Canary Call around a bit. And I know Rob Butler's been quite keen to distill it. But, some people would argue that Norwich doing badly works better for us. But that's not true, actually. I think everyone works better. And Dave will be able to tell you this in terms of newspaper sales as well. Everyone does better when Norwich City are winning games. And, it makes my life and job a hell of a lot easier when they're doing that. So this year has been significantly more enjoyable.
I think I've probably had that same conversation many times over the...
you probably know the people I'm referring to, yeah.
and before that, to try and spell out, that actually the majority of journalists, even if they're not direct Norwich City fans, of course they want... they want the team to do well. That's why wouldn't you? Of course, you want to go and cover a trip to Wembley and be there and cover an open top bus parade. As I alluded to earlier, I spent a good few years working in Preston. I covered them as a news journalist when they won the Championship playoffs years and years ago now, over in Cardiff before Norwich had got there. And you become, of course you care, you want them to do well. There's nothing like seeing people happy and enjoying something. So yeah, it's a massive misnomer that it's better for the media that the team's not doing well. It's the complete opposite, because people might want to go online and have a good moan about it, but it's always a struggle to get people to want to read about it if it's defeat after defeat after defeat.
Yeah, and the same goes for booking guests on this podcast as well. So, which is why I'm doubly appreciative that you're both here after Saturday. Unless there was anything we've missed from the season, obviously we could cover it in a lot more detail. Connor, I'm sure you're going to do that on the Pinkham podcast before the end of May. I think by and large it's been a good one.
Go on, Dave, I think we've been treated to some really good goals amongst.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah.
Amongst some football that at times isn't, it's not up there with, the attackingness of Lambert and the kind of flair of Farker. But actually some of the solo goals this season from Sara, Nunez, have been phenomenal. I mean, of course, Sainz as well. So we've seen some really good goals. And Johnny Rowe, of course, yeah.
I was thinking the other day that Rowe scored great goals home and away against Hull, which were absolutely key, ultimately in us finishing above them. Excellent points and brilliant goals this season. Can anyone pick a favourite? I mean, I don't know if I'm going with recency bias here, but I could watch that Sarah one against Swansea from last weekend again and again and again.
It's the one against Rotherham for me, the volley. I just think the technique on that is absolutely outrageous. I think you'd be hard pressed to find a better goal anywhere in the Championship this season than that one. Albeit, I know maybe that people want to talk about the opposition, but that was a special strike.
I have to say, as a former centre back who loved a goal off the bunts, that's probably why I've got no hair left. The Sergeant one in that same game got me up. That was a phenomenal header, and I don't know. I don't feel like you see loads of sort of Alan Shearer-esque headers like that anymore. So that was a fantastic headed goal. That really was.
Yeah, Sergeant Loki is great in the air. Maybe not low key, actually. I think people recognize it, but six headed goals this season. I don't know, do you want another quiz question, because I can throw one at you if you want? I'm getting nods. So three other Norwich City players have scored six headers in a season since the year 2000 in a league season. Can you name who they are?
Holt.
Correct. It's a problem with asking a quiz question, giving absolutely no notice whatsoever, is that it just results in a lot of thinking.
Definitely silence. Can you edit silence out? I'm pretty sure you can. So it looks like we answered really quickly.
I'll do it like that. Yes, Ewan is correct.
Ewan, of course. Yeah. Sorry, Ewan. Disgraceful that didn't roll off the tongue.
The third one is more recent than Holti. Not.
Oh, okay. I was going to say Steve Morrison, but that's similar era, isn't it?
He got five that year, Morrison, but he didn't get to
what
six.
About Jerome?
Is correct, yes.
Jerome scored at the weekend, didn't he? I believe.
Still last going.
Yeah,
he scored at Bolton, didn't he? Oh, I'd love to play Cameron Jerome again. It'd be great to see him again. I don't know whether he'd stay on at Bolton if they did go up. But
I actually saw him play this season. There's a little fact for you. Burton Albion. Yeah.
Did he score?
He didn't score. He only played for about 11 minutes. So, yeah, he didn't score. Didn't do anything.
Well, it's just tremendous to see him, though. I mean, like, it does.
That's the main reason I do like going to lower league games. Is I just get very excited when I scour through Wikipedia to see, oh my god, that's where that player ended up. I'll give you the other one. Sorry, I'm totally going off topic. Cambridge United centre back. There you go, Steve. Now it's your turn for the quiz question.
Who the ex Norwich one?
Ex Norwich, Cambridge United centre back versus Burton Albion this season, and it gave me great delight to see him playing again.
Ryan Bennett, is he there?
Ryan Bennett, yeah. And he's still a bit classy. Glides through games. He never seemed to run, did he? Seemed to glide through a game.
Sort of deceptively young when he was with us as well. I'd always got the impression he could have joined us in his 30s, but he was just that sort of player that never had pace. Was just, you know, just
he doesn't look any older either, does he? Doesn't look any older now. No. Just looks exactly the same.
Yeah, maybe he'll still be exactly the same in 10 years time. I don't know, he'll still be at Cambridge. So many, like, just completely different era, but so many great players we've had over the years. It's good that they're still playing their trade in League One. Then not that far away from us, really. I think in summation, it's been a good year and great goals, great players. Hopefully we'll have some of those great players next season, but that's a conversation for another day, I think. I feel like we've run out of time to talk about Ipswich. What a shame. We've heard enough about them over the weekend, haven't we? And I'm sure there'll be plenty of breath of fresh air comments next season. I'm looking forward to those. Well, I think unless there was anything that we've left out, then
on Ipswich, a good friend of mine called Ben has spent the day today not covering, but he's been paid to film their promotion parade. So he's had a very enjoyable day. So I thought that was worth a mention. So he's been stood amongst thousands of Ipswich fans today at their promotion parade, probably hating every second of it.
OK, so Ben is a Norwich fan, to confirm.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't think of anything worse than that as a Norwich fan. I mean, even losing in
the
playoff final
might not be a main bank holiday. Yeah.
I mean, you could have tried to. Could he have worn yellow and green? Just see how you get on. Just as a challenge.
Well, I mean, he was getting paid for the privilege, so there is that. But I think whether that helps, I don't know. But yeah, probably not a pleasant experience, I wouldn't imagine.
No, well, thoughts and prayers are with you, Ben, and hopefully you can balance that out with a nice playoff campaign coming up for Norwich City. Well, you know, who knows? We might be up there with them next season, then we can talk about them plenty more then.
Ipswich being up for me is enough of an impetus to make me kind of think, do you know what? I do want us to be in the Premier League next year, because I like it when we're in the same league as Ipswich. There are cup finals, aren't they? And I know we had this debate because you and Dan, Steve, feel completely different. Completely different. And I love it when we're in the same league as Ipswich.
I'd quite happily never play them again. Quite happily. Yeah.
I love the games. I think it's been hard
do
enough
you?
This
I
season.
Don't.
I don't even love the games. But that game
I like
was
when they're over.
Yes. I like when they're over. But I think you can multiply that by 10 next year if we're both in a relegation battle, because those games are going to be absolutely massive. Absolutely massive. Anyway, we're not there yet. I'm talking about it like it's going to happen. It's not. It might not
I've already got my Wembley hat, remember?
Yes, that's true. Yeah. Okay. Well, we've got that far. So yeah. We'll once we beat Russell Martin Southampton in the final, then we'll have that chat. Anyway, that is all for today's On the Ball, the Norwich City podcast that has just two or three marathons left to go. Make sure you subscribe to On the Ball if you haven't already. It's free on whatever your usual player is. Just search On the Ball Norwich City on your preferred social platform. And if you don't want to listen to us, and you can also always listen to the Pinkham podcast, of course. But if you do, then any ratings or reviews are very much appreciated. And if you want to get in touch with any questions or stats for me, then I guess you can send me a message on Twitter at NCFC Numbers and I'll try and get back to you. A huge thank you to our guests tonight. Connor, thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much for having me. Really enjoyed it.
And enjoy Leeds even more, hopefully. But yeah, enjoyed your company. Thank you so much. And Dave, sorry you can't make it on Sunday, but enjoy the playoff final and thanks for coming on.
Really nice to be reunited with Connor as well. Good to see you again, mate.
Oh, how lovely. Likewise.
This is a much more touching end to the podcast. I've been always sick of each other by this time. But that probably says more about me than anyone else. Anyway, thank you both. Thank you all for listening. We will be back next week when we'll be 50% of the way through our playoff semi-final journey and probably wondering whether we can hold on to that 4-goal lead in Yorkshire. Until then, never mind the danger.